come around here anymore. I had to move, really had to move. That's why, if you please, I am on my bended knees. Bertha, don't you come around here anymore.
Covering a song can be a risky proposition for any musician for a number of reasons. Now, for an up-and-coming artist, it can be a nice tool to get yourself noticed. Recording a song that's familiar to people will get their attention. The wise artists will strike a balance in their arrangements to be faithful enough to the song that it shows respect for that song and the original artist, but it puts enough of their style in there to showcase their own talents. But that can be a very hard balance to strike. And the really tricky part is, you just never know where that line is. And of course, all of this is subjective, and how it all comes together is only evaluated in the ear of the beholder. Now, in my opinion, unless an established artist is asked to contribute to a tribute album, or unless there is someone that that artist really wants to honor, there's almost never a good reason to record a cover, really. I mean, the only time an established musician should record a cover is when they absolutely feel like they have such a different take on it that they can turn the song into something completely different from the original. Many will disagree with me on this, most likely starting with the guy in the other microphone in the studio. Now, covers during a performance are a completely different thing. It's an opportunity to offer an audience a little something different, raise the energy level in the crowd, and have a good time. But there's a danger there as well. I used to play in a cover band, and the practice of finding a song, tearing it down, and rebuilding it for your own band can actually ruin the song for you. A song you absolutely love, if you spend too much time with it figuring out the chords and really trying to figure out how it all comes together, that song can lose its mysticism. That's part of the reason I don't play in that band anymore. But every now and then, recording a cover can create a unique type of magic. That right arrangement at the right time in the right hands can breathe new life into a song that has become tired and hasn't aged well. Sometimes an overlooked gem gets unearthed and it gives that song the chance it never really had. It doesn't happen very often at all, but every now and then someone covers a song and bests the original. Again, all of this is subjective. It's all in the ear of the beholder. Mostly. Tonight, celebrating the birthday of a guy who actually created a better version of a song written by one of the greatest songwriters of our time, we are going to offer a list of songs that we think beat the odds. Tonight, we play covers of songs that are better than the originals. My name is Rich Larson. His name is Daniel G. Moyer. This is the Weekly List. Love is so long. Well, good evening, everybody. You're listening to AM 1080, FM 95.1, KYMN Radio in beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. Thank you for joining us once again for another edition of The Weekly List. Danny.
Yes, sir.
You play the guitar.
Yes, sir, I do.
You are a musician.
Some people would disagree with that.
You have played in bands.
Yeah.
What is your philosophy about covers?
I love playing covers. Yeah. I really do. And I mean, I was in this band. We always thought we were kind of tried to do rock and roll. We played stuff so fast. It was really kind of punk. But I love playing it. It was always fun to play in bars. And we used to open with Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin, which is the perfect song to open with.
I would never in my life attempt to play rock and roll in any band at all.
And some of them, you know, I remember we used to do, it was summer 87. We did Don't Dream It's Over, but we did my brother, who was a drummer, hated that song.
Yeah.
And he would speed up the tempo. So don't dream. It would literally, it's normally that nice.
Yeah. Bum, bum, bum,
we played it at this speed.
Wow.
Don't dream it's over.
Hey now. Oh, wow.
Hey now.
Yeah.
And wow. I loved it. We used to call it playing faster than gravity because we used to jump up and down in pogo.
Oh, that's cute.
And the beat would be faster. We couldn't jump fast enough.
You were a bunch of kids. That's really
fun.
Cute.
Yeah. So, covers in bands are great. Yeah. I love them.
I played in a cover band.
Yeah.
And like I even tried to slip a few originals in there every now and then. It just really didn't work.
Yeah.
I loved being in a band. Loved it. Anytime I've been in a band, it's been like the time of my life. But I don't know. I feel like if I get right in the middle of a song and I have to sort of push my way out again, I do like this term mysticism. For me, there's just something mystical about music.
Oh, no doubt.
And I don't want I like that, and I don't want that to lose a shine. Anyway, so covers.
I got to say, Rich, before we start, I have been looking forward to doing this show for so long because covers are magical when they're done right.
Yeah.
When they're right, and they can give a viewpoint of a song that the listener may not know.
Right.
And some of the songs that we've got here changed with... dramatically. There's some of these people may never have heard and go, what?
Right,
and that's my hope.
Right.
Hopefully it doesn't cause somebody to completely disavow something, but hopefully it just gives a new dimension.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what you were talking
about. Well, and that's, to me, I mean, that's rare when that happens.
It is.
Rare. For the 12 songs we're going to play tonight, there are 12 million songs that went awry.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, I generally am very skeptical of anyone who tells me they're going to cover just about anything. Now, I mean, there are certain songwriters who like just beg to be covered.
Yes.
Right. Like, you know, Dylan comes to mind.
Dylan,
right?
Yes.
But because, and that's just because, and I, this makes me crazy, but it's because so many people can't get past his voice, right?
Yeah.
You know, and we've got a Dylan cover on the show, which also happens to be, in my opinion, the greatest cover ever recorded.
You know, it's going to be sick because I agree.
Well,
and
I've known that we agree
on
this.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like so many people have tried to record Dylan songs, and for me, Tom Waits is another one. Tom Waits begs to be covered because he's such an amazing songwriter, but he's got a voice that people have a hard time getting past.
I mean, Rod Stewart has done some really good.
Yeah,
Tom Waits
you know
covers.
What? Give me Tom Waits' Downtown Train over Rod Stewart's any day of the week.
Well, I can see that. I mean, for me, Heart of Saturday Night. Nobody sings that except for Tom Waits.
No.
Nobody.
No.
Hands down.
You know, well, and then, of course, there's Hootie and the Blowfish's Hope I Don't Fall in Love with You.
I don't even want to go there.
I'm kidding.
No, you're
I'm kidding. I'm just pushing a button.
God,
no, I'm kidding.
Well, actually, it's funny that you bring Hootie and the Blowfish up.
Really?
Because the first song we played tonight...
Was Bertha.
Was Bertha by the Grateful Dead, and this
was
a version...
Well, that was Los Lobos.
Well, this was... But that's who the original is Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
This was a version by Los Lobos.
Yeah.
And I adore Los Lobos. But
that's good.
Yeah, I saw them once.
That's even better.
Yeah,
I have to stop. Right.
Okay.
Anytime Los Lobos comes up in conversation, I have to say this.
Okay.
If you have never seen Los Lobos, drop everything you're doing right now. Go to your computer. go find Los Lobos' touring itinerary, figure out where they're going to be that is closest to you next, buy tickets, and go to that show. Los Lobos might be the best live band I've ever seen.
They are incredible.
They're unbelievable.
I saw them at a secret gig.
Oh, that's outstanding.
At O'Gara's.
That's outstanding.
Because there was a company that was one of my vendors that were doing, they used to do these.
Right, you've told me about
they,
that.
They used
yeah.
to do these yeah. these concerts that you collect so many points with their right. products. And I was tipped off about it and invited. And it was, there was a, so I remember going there and I knew what the band was. And yeah. I was super psyched. And
that's I'm, awesome.
And O'Gara's too.
Yeah, man.
They were amazing. Oh, and God, so I got to reemphasize what Rich just said. Yeah, look up their touring itinerary. We got to go and see them. Next time they're in Minneapolis, you and I need to go.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I've got like these three people that I always go see Los Lobos
okay,
with.
Well,
it's a thing.
Well, then I'll just be over in the corner, like having a beer or something.
I got to see Los Lobos. I probably have told you this. I got to see listeners. I probably have told you this. I got to see Los Lobos at a community arts center in Mesa, Arizona, which. When I talk about a community arts center, it's like the Ames Center in Burnsville, a big, big
okay.
place, like where yeah. we saw Todd Rundgren.
Yeah.
And but it was a thing where, well, first of all, my wife and I were the only white people in the crowd,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, everyone was brown, and it was amazing. And they do this every now and then. They work with, they find a local... folk dancing troupe, a Mexican folk dancing troupe. They came out, they played an acoustic set, first set, right? And they were just off to the side and they played their songs, their Spanish
that's so
songs,
cool.
you know,
that's so cool.
And this folk dancing troupe was astonishing. They were so
that's
great.
Amazing.
And, you know, and things like, you know, La Pistola y El Corazon, stuff like, just amazing stuff. And and then in the second set, they just, you know, they rocked out
and they did their thing. Fantastic. Well, I love Los Lobos. This opening song is a bit of a challenge for me. I'll be very honest with this.
Why is that?
Okay. I'm going to say something very sacrilegious. I know that for a lot of people, and you always go and say that I love everything, and that's not a true statement, and I kind of bristle at that. And the reason that I kind of bristle at that is I really don't like the Grateful Dead. I really honestly don't. I keep trying. It's kind of like tomatoes. I like tomatoes in all of the various forms except for actual tomatoes. I've tried it every 6 months. I'll try a tomato and go, nope, I haven't got a taste for it yet. So ketchup, yes. Salsa, yes. Tomatoes, no. Grateful Dead, love jamming. The Grateful Dead, the thing about it for me is I just don't think their material is very good. I don't think that they've got great songs. And so I love Los Lobos, but the song Bertha kind of leaves me cold. This is why I like Dave Matthews Band, because the Dave Matthews Band are jammers, but they actually have really good songs. And now Rich is giving me the dead fish eye.
Well...
Go. I know that you're processing.
I'm gonna let you finish.
Okay.
I'm gonna let you finish.
Okay. So I'm Grateful Dead, not my thing. But however, like I said over dinner, I really love the live version of Terrapin Station that can be found on So Many Roads, that box set. And I've got like a whole bunch of live Dead stuff. I do. I honestly keep trying. I got American Beauty, but I'm not. Those are things that you have to have. And okay, I'm gonna stop and. Begin the.
You're talking really fast. Are you nervous?
A little bit. Yeah. You're bigger than me.
How long have I known you?
Yeah.
Like, I love the Dead. I do. I love the Grateful Dead. I can understand why there are people who don't like the Dead. They were sloppy. They could do some really cool stuff. There's the whole drug thing. I will honestly tell you, I've never dropped acid and listened to the Dead because I don't need to. I don't. It's fine. You don't like the Dead? That's fine. That's a really good song. And in the hands of a band like Los Lobos, that was from the 1991 Dedicated tribute album.
Sure.
Which. Like opened my eyes to a lot of Dead songs that I had not actually liked very well,
mm-hmm.
But that's one like just to me it's just a great rock and roll song.
Well, I have tremendous respect for all of them. I mean, Jerry Garcia an incredible tone. I mean,
yeah, he did.
His style is so fluid.
Yep.
I just have a, you know, it's just.
It's not your thing.
It's not my thing. And I suppose, this is
you have very little hippie in you.
I look like a lot of hippie in me.
Yeah,
I'm really not. The only thing I can say, and I'm gonna watch Rich get a rise out of him right now. It's like, well, you know, maybe if I was at the St. Como Zoo and I had some mushrooms and I looked at a polar bear, maybe I would be a big Dead fan.
It couldn't hurt you. It really wouldn't hurt you. All right, so that was Bertha. Well, you guys just missed a whole bunch of really good radio because I accidentally, evidently pushed the pause button on the record. So
I'm still thinking, this is still residue fallout from the War on Drugs show. Obviously,
yes,
you didn't clean the studio very well. There's a lot of.
I guess. Anyway, our next song is inspired. This song is the inspiration for the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Today. His real name is like Manfred Lubavitz. Manfred Mann is 81 years old today. So happy birthday,
yeah.
Manfred.
Manfred Mann.
The man who brought you Doo-Wah Diddy and the man who brought you... He had another hit, too.
You know, I'll tell you. When I was a kid...
Oh, Mighty Quinn. The Mighty Quinn.
That's right.
Which was another cover.
Right. One of my favorite 45s when I was a kid, Manfred Mann had a song called My Name is Jack.
Yeah.
And... it's just this unique song. You can only find it in mono. I think it was from like 1963. Sure. And the chorus was, "My name is Jack and I live in the back of the Greta Garbo Home for Wayward Boys and Girls."
I like that.
A chorus. Yeah. I mean, it was all so right. much fun. Anyhow.
Yeah. Anyway.
Manfred Mann, and you were afraid that we were going to have a raging fight.
I thought we were going to have a throwdown over this because I didn't think you liked this song.
No, I like the song. We're talking about the song... Blinded by the Light.
Right.
Was originally written by Bruce Springsteen,
right.
And it appeared on his debut album,
yep.
Greetings from Asbury Park. And Springsteen's way of writing, he jams, those first two records especially, he jammed a lot of words
yeah,
into very
really
tiny
did.
Spaces.
He really did.
Manfred Mann had a big hit with this song.
This is the only Bruce Springsteen number one song.
I know, isn't
the
that
The only
amazing?
Time a Springsteen song has gone to number one is this.
Yeah, and I know that you were going to think that I was going to, what are you talking about? It's so much better by Springsteen. And I've got nothing but respect for Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen really helped me get through some very, very dark places in my life.
And you know my Mount Rushmore.
Yes.
Springsteen's on Mount Rushmore
for me. But this version is really good. And I think what I liked about this is that Manfred Mann put together a version that, It's true to Springsteen, but without having that... Manfred Mann was certainly a lot more experienced than Springsteen right. was by this point in when this came out.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Cut.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows.
I liken this song to a deconstructed salad.
I think that's...
Like
that
you got this thing over here, you got that thing over there, it's all on the same plate, and then, so you go over here and you have a little bit of this, and then you try a little bit of that, maybe you combine a little bit of this and that, you know, a little tomato, a little mozzarella, whatever, you know, and that's kind of what this song is for me.
Yeah, I love that analogy. That's a good way to put it.
Also, I just like the word calliope.
Now, you were saying on the version... that we lost to the air.
The lost version.
So tell me something about about the recording of this. You found out some stuff, because there's some controversy
right,
with this.
Right, right, right. Well,
with this.
We
so
have
tell
to,
me
we
about
have
it.
To discuss the word douche.
Right.
Right.
Which is not in the lyric.
It is not wrapped up like a douche. It's revved up like a deuce, which is a 1932 Ford coupe.
Right.
The original lyric in the Springsteen version is revved up like a deuce.
Right.
Or no, cut loose like a deuce.
Cut loose
Springsteen.
Like a deuce.
And Manfred is, or it's not even Manfred. It's Chris Taylor is the guy who's singing.
Okay. Yeah.
And he says revved up like a deuce, but Chris Slade, who is the drummer on this. So Chris Slade.
Seriously?
Chris Slade, who played in Uriah Heep and AC/DC. I saw him live play with The Firm. He played with everybody. I don't know if Chris Slade is still with us.
Yeah.
Or anyway, but Chris Slade was talking about the recording of this song and how the reason it sounds like douche is because the tape machine had a weird angle on the tape or something. and it just sounds like that. They couldn't mix it out. They couldn't fix it. So that there it is, you know. And to me, that's like it's a happy accident because to me that sort of adds to the legend of this song.
A little bit.
That's rock and roll, baby.
Didn't this get banned at some points? Because this was like 76, wasn't it?
1976. I don't know if it got banned or not.
Well,
I heard it when I was a kid, so I heard it in the 70s. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't banned in Minneapolis, but, you know, I don't know.
And this was Springsteen's only number one
hit.
This
is Springsteen's
only composition, because Dancing in the Dark only hit number two,
yep,
blocked by When Doves Cry.
As it should have been.
Well, I like Dancing in the Dark. I may not like the Grateful Dead, but I like Dancing in the Dark.
Do Not Tread. I love Mount Rushmore, Springsteen.
I know,
but Do Not Tread on Prince and When Doves Cry.
Oh, well, no, I'm not going to. But it would have been nice if he just gave up number one for 1 week.
Nope. Can't have it. Can't have it. From 1976, this is Manfred Mann's Earth Band with "Blinded by the Light" on 95.1 KYMN, The Douche.
Chance, see if it was safe outside. And little early birdie came by in his curly whirly and asked me if I needed a ride. Asked me if I needed a ride. Well, she was blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche under the runner in the night. Blinded by the light, she got down, but she never got touched. She's gonna make it to the night. She's gonna make it through. We'll be right back.
from 1984 off of her She's So Unusual album. That was Cyndi Lauper with When You Were Mine, a song that was written by the Minneapolis genius himself, Prince. I have an opinion. I know this is going to shock you.
Yeah.
I have an opinion on that song. I don't really care for Cyndi Lauper's version of When You Were Mine. Nor do I really care for Prince's version of When You Were Mine. I think it's a really good song that has never been recorded well.
Okay. And the original from Prince was on Dirty Mind.
Yep.
And we played that during the Prince show.
It was
one of my, this version by Cyndi Lauper, the reason that I think that it's superior to it is there's a lot of similar elements. I know this song, of course, from Dirty Mind. That was where I first heard it. But I remember Cyndi Lauper appeared on the American Music Awards. She had, at the time,
You lose me at American Music Awards.
Okay. Well, she had a big hit with Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Yep.
Time After Time had not been released yet. That was her second single.
Right.
But so she's coming out, and I was expecting her to play Girls Just Want to Have Fun, which
you were expecting her to lip sync to Girls Just
Want to,
because in 1984, that's what they were all doing on the American Music Awards.
Anyhow, what she wound up doing...
Can you hear the disgust?
Yes, I hear the disgust.
All right.
What she did is she came out and she was performing, and the thing that I thought was really intriguing, it was this song, and I went, oh, cool. I had no idea she had covered it. I had not heard the album yet. And she had a paintbrush, and she was painting on the floor. And I was thinking, wow, and they had I had no idea what she was painting, but she was painting something. And she was singing or lip syncing along.
Yep.
And at the very end of the performance, the camera went up over her. And this is a song about losing somebody, When You Were Mine.
Yep.
And she when she was finished, she collapsed, because in the version, she actually does cry when she recorded that. And she was crying in the studio when she was singing it. And so
she really cries in the video for Time After Time too.
Right.
She's a crier. Anyway.
She's a crier. Anyhow, when she was finished, she literally on that live performance broke down, and she's standing there, lying on the stage with her paintbrush, and the camera goes up to reveal that what she's painted on the floor was "I Love You."
Oh, that's sweet.
And for me, as I was, I was like a 16-year-old kid, I'm like, I got to go and buy this album like now. And because of that video, that visual image, and Cyndi Lauper has an extraordinary voice. She's a lot more than just pop froth. I was like, oh, got to have that. And Time After Time is, to mention this, I love that song. There's so many great covers. I actually have a thing of where I've collected covers of Time After Time, and I've got like 14 different
versions. I can't believe you didn't put one on the show.
Well, no, the reason is there's a great version by Paul Anka, which is like a big bang.
That would have made my head explode.
It would have. And there's a kind of a hip-hop version by INOJ.
Okay.
That's really good. The reason was we had the decision that the cover must be better than the original.
The cover must
that
be
was
better
one of the things.
The, yeah.
And I was my original thought was I was going to play one of those versions.
Yeah.
But I went, you know what? Cyndi Lauper's version of Time After Time is so good that I'm not going to admit publicly that hers is not the best, because it is the best. But all of these different Time After Time, all of the variety of covers really illustrate the point that you're making, is that you're doing something completely different, whether it's a Paul Anka or whether it's an instrumental fusion version or I've got an EDM version, an instrumental of Time After Time. They all show different things. And I have to mention that because it's Cyndi Lauper doing a cover, and I couldn't have a Cyndi Lauper cover on here for obvious reasons.
Okay.
So there it is. That's enough of my thing.
Sometimes you do a cover and it's low-hanging fruit, because the song is not very good, and you know you can do it better. Such is the tale of Black Betty.
Yeah, I don't like the song.
It's a fine song. Yeah. Ram Jam the Ram Jam version, the original, just doesn't do a whole lot for me. However, it's the perfect song for this band, Larkin Poe.
Okay.
Whom we saw. We saw them open for Bob Seger.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah,
they
played this song when we saw them.
Yeah, see, I must have.
Yeah, but they're fantastic. They're two sisters, and I apologize because I can't remember their names, but they're descendants of Edgar Allan Poe. These two
really?
Sisters are, but they call themselves Larkin Poe because that was the name of their great 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 grandfather.
Okay,
whom they never met.
You know, I remember that. That was like one of the last shows that
before the pandemic.
Before the pandemic,
yeah,
that was. You know, I had a whole new appreciation for Bob Seger because of that show.
I'm really glad, but we're not talking about Bob Seger.
I know,
talking about
Larkin Poe was.
Stay with me here.
Great.
Yeah, Larkin Poe's fantastic, and it's these two sisters who like look like they should be like playing like dance pop, and they play gut bucket rock and roll blues, and
yeah.
One sister plays a guitar and sings, and the other one plays a lap steel slide thing, and they're wonderful. And that's all I got. Here's Larkin Poe with Black Betty at 95.1 KYMN.
Whoa, Black Betty, bambalamba. Whoa, Black Betty, bambalam. Black Betty had a child, bambalam. The damn thing go wild, bambalam. A boogie out of my mind, bambalam. The damn thing gone blind, bambalamba. Whoa, Black Betty, whoa. Jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty now. Whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty now. Whoa, Black Betty, bambalamba, whoa, Black Betty, bambalamba. She really gets me high, bambalamba, you know that's no lie. Bambalamba, she's so rock steady, bambalamba, and she's always ready. Bambalamba, whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty. Jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty now. Mm-hmm. Whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty now. Mm-hmm. Whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty, are you ready now? Black Betty, are you ready now? She's shaking that thing, bambalam. She really makes me sing, bambalam. Whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty now. Hey, whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty now. Hey, whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty, jump steady, Black Betty. Whoa, Black Betty, whoa, Black Betty, jump steady, jump steady.
Falling, and I'm free. more falling. All the vampires walking through the valley, they move west down Ventura Boulevard. And all the bad boys standing in the shadows, and the girls are home with broken hearts, and I'm free, free falling, falling. Now I'm free, free falling, falling. Wanna free fall out into nothing. Oh, I'm gonna leave this world for a while. Now I'm free, free falling, falling. Now I'm free, free falling, falling.
We'll see you in a few minutes.
That was John Mayer with his cover of Tom Petty's Free Fallin', and that can be found on Mayer's live album called Where the Light Is. And I think, really, of all of these covers, that one is probably my favorite moment of this show.
Really?
That version. I just love
it. It's nice, but yeah. I don't think it's, I don't know, I mean, it's nice.
It's nice. Nice is like the worst description word.
It's good.
I mean, because it's non-committal. It's a very Minnesotan.
It's good. I'm not over the moon over it. But I like the original Free Fallin'. Mm-hmm. There's stuff in this that I miss.
Yeah.
I like the background vocals in Free Fallin'. The Jeff Lynne stuff that's happening.
Sure.
In the background. But Mayer, you know, can we have a very quick discussion about John Mayer?
Sure.
For a moment? I don't hate John Mayer.
Okay.
My name is Rich, and I don't hate John Mayer. That's my confession for the night.
Okay.
Most people hate John Mayer.
I know.
And I think there's a thing that you're supposed to hate John Mayer. I don't hate John Mayer. John Mayer made a very terrible, like I had a year where he was making terrible mistakes left and right.
Unbelievable.
I've learned over, I don't know, however many years, I guess, to a certain extent, not completely, to a certain extent, I'm willing to separate art from the artist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I don't ever want to hang out with John Mayer because he seems kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
But the man plays great guitar.
Oh.
He sings very well. He doesn't always write great songs, but when he puts his mind to it, he can write a really good song. There's actually I'm going to completely contradict myself here. There was a song that I really had wanted to put on this show, that came off of Eric Clapton's tribute album to J.J. Cale.
Okay.
He and John Mayer do the song called Magnolia, and it's gorgeous. It is gorgeous. We played Clapton last week and I'm not happy with Clapton these days. So I didn't want to play Clapton 2 weeks in a row.
Well, yeah, and I can see there's a lot of comparisons that I can make with John Mayer and Eric Clapton.
They're both jerks.
Well, they're not people maybe that I want to hang out, but they're both good guitarists.
Yeah.
I guess what I like about this version and why I'm so pleased to have it as part of this is I love the song Free Fallin', and I love Tom Petty's version, yeah. which came out first by a good 15 years.
Well, yeah, that's why this is a cover.
Right. Well, I know, but...
Thank you. But, I'll be here all night.
But the thing about John Mayer's version is he's stripped all of these elements, and he's made a little bit of changes to some of the melody, but at no point does he eradicate or destroy Tom Petty.
Oh.
It becomes his own thing. It's like now he owns this. And then at the same time, this is a version where there's three players. There's John Mayer who's singing and playing. You've got his bass player. I can't remember who the name of it is. But that's Robbie McIntosh, who's kind of playing a little bit of the slide. That's there.
Robbie McIntosh.
That's Robbie McIntosh.
No kid, Robbie yeah. McIntosh of the Pretenders yes. and later from Paul McCartney's band.
Yep.
That's Robbie McIntosh.
That's
no
Robbie
kidding.
McIntosh. And so these are he's got some serious players.
Yeah.
And there's also the John Mayer trio
right.
that appear on this live album. And that's got Pino Palladino
yeah.
on bass. And so anyhow... This version revealed a whole lot more melancholy
yes.
that came out.
Yes.
I don't think that Petty's vocal delivery and Jeff Lynne's production really revealed
no,
some
I
of
agree.
The sadness
I agree
that comes with the song Free Falling.
I agree with you. And in fact, I think the sadness gets lost
yes.
in Petty's version, like to the point where I'm not always sure that it's supposed to be a sad song.
No, it's
in
incredibly
Mayer's hands,
sad.
It's super sad.
And I think a lot of people, when they hear the song Free Falling, they think about that scene in Jerry Maguire
right,
where Tom Cruise
yeah,
singing is singing
lungs,
it
yeah.
at the top of his lungs. Because
it's
I'm
the
like,
only song he knows, right? Yeah.
Right. And yeah. I'm going, no, that's not what this song is about.
Well,
Cameron
Crowe's trying to make a point. There
right,
that,
he is, yes, he yeah, is. Yeah. But I think in Mayer's hand on this, it became something different. And for me, I related a lot more to the melancholy of that acoustic bit. So that's yeah. my take on
okay.
Free Fallin'
right.
as done by John Mayer.
All right. This next song. You know what's really funny about this? So today is October 21st.
Mm-hmm.
A week from Saturday, I have a show with my holiday partner, Corey Butler, coming up, Halloween on the Cannon.
Oh, nice.
Saturday, and we play the original version of this song.
Okay, by Nine Inch Nails.
By Nine Inch Nails. Right, exactly. We are now going to give you Johnny Cash.
Yes.
And Hurt.
Yeah, and I love Nine Inch Nails. There are four writers that are instrumental in understanding the 90s in my mind. One of them is Chris Cornell from Soundgarden. Another one is...
I've heard of Chris Cornell.
Yes. The other one is Kurt Cobain.
I've heard of him, too.
From Nirvana.
Yeah.
Eddie Vedder.
And Johnny Cash.
And Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails.
What about Shannon Hoon?
What about
Darius Rucker?
Definitely not Rucker. No disrespect. We're not going to go there again, Rich. I'm just not Hootie and the Blowfish guy. I'm not Alanis Morissette.
What about Mariah Carey?
Okay. Again, you're pushing my buttons. I don't like everything.
What about what's her name? Gwen Stefani.
I like Gwen Stefani.
I know you do.
Yeah, I love. Yeah. I love No Doubt.
But she's part of that. What about Scott Sapp?
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah. Oh, God. Jeez.
That's the closest we'll ever come to talking about Creed on this show.
Yeah, that's as close. We've gone too far. But
yes.
But anyhow, this is a version. Normally, I always wonder about what does the original artist think of it when somebody does a cover?
Yeah.
And so Trent Reznor is one of the really, really, really important voices of the 90s, at least in my point of view, and I love Nine Inch Nails. And this is, I think the original was on the Downward Spiral.
Yes, it was.
And so then I always wondered.
1994, the Downward Spiral.
Right.
Nine Inch Nails. Yes. Okay. Go ahead.
You've heard of them.
Yes.
Anyhow, one of the things I've always wondered, I remember hearing Johnny Cash's version going, what? He's covering Nine Inch Nails? And this is Rick Rubin.
Right.
Who put this together.
Right.
And this is on his fourth.
The American Songs series that Rick Rubin produced for Johnny Cash
Incredible.
What a way to play yourself out. Because these were the last albums that Cash made.
And
holy
and
man.
This album in particular, the fourth one of that American series, this was the last album that he came out.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I remember hearing this notion of Johnny Cash is going to do Nine Inch Nails. How does that work?
Right.
And then I heard this and went, you know what? Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails no longer own this song anymore.
Yeah.
And I was kind of wondering, well, what does Trent have to say about this?
Yeah.
And he was asked about it, and he looked like he was going to be on the verge of tears.
Really?
And he basically said, I don't own that song anymore. That Johnny Cash outdid me on here.
Yeah.
And clearly, it's completely different than the Nine Inch Nails.
He gets so down to the soul of this song, man.
Yeah, I mean,
God bless Trent Reznor, and I don't disagree with you that Trent Reznor is a very important voice from the 90s. I don't know that he's
like not for everybody.
And I don't listen to a ton of Nine Inch Nails, but what I do listen to, I like very much. But for me, Reznor is as much about production as he is about the song mm-hmm. itself.
Oh yeah, right?
And he's, you know, he's all about the equipment that he's using, and great. I mean, you know, he's a guy who can play a studio.
Yeah,
like and it's amazing. He's one of those guys that can make an album all by himself and make
it
sound. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's a good songwriter. Clearly, he's a good songwriter.
Great songwriter.
But Johnny Cash, man, boils this thing down to its just essence.
And the lyrics on this song, and you can have it all, my empire of dirt.
Right.
I mean, the imagery that comes in those words, it's perfect.
Yes.
And, you know, I will make you hurt.
Yeah.
And so I love this. This was one of my choices. So this is Johnny Cash with Hurt here on KYMN 95.1, The Ooksie.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else, I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of
are a lot of underrepresented bands on the weekly list, but I hang my head in shame when I think about how little we have played Husker Du on the show.
Oh, man. And I love that band.
Oh, God. I love that band. I love Bob Mould.
Yeah, his voice.
I love it. That is my like all-time favorite TV theme song, too.
Is it really?
I was so happy when you put this song on.
Oh, I love their version. Yeah. And now the original version is by Sonny Curtis.
Right. It's the theme from the Mary Tyler Moore show.
Yeah, and the name of the song is called Love Is All Around.
Yeah. Which I love it. A Twin Cities band playing the theme song from a sitcom set in the Twin Cities.
Right. When I was a kid in the 70s, no matter where we lived, my parents were from Minnesota, and I lived every place except for Minnesota. and I forget what night it was, but I remember my family, every single episode of Mary Tyler Moore we watched. Because they loved the opening sequence where you saw Mary Tyler Moore. She's walking all around the lakes. Yeah.
And there's one where she's driving down 494 when there's nothing on 494 except for the Radisson South.
Yes.
Back when it was still the Radisson South.
You know, and you see the Daytons where she throws the hat and everything. Yeah. So for me, I love that show because when I was a kid, it was like, look, there's... And for my parents, it was nostalgia. They got to see their home.
Yeah.
And it whether we lived in Virginia or whether we lived in Ohio, that was, oh, great, you know. And now they've got that statue of Mary Tyler Moore.
Yep.
And I also really like Mary Tyler Moore quite a bit personally because she is a type 1 diabetic.
Not anymore, she does.
Well, I know, but there was...
Rest in peace, Ms. Moore.
Right, yeah. But that was one of those things where when I first was diagnosed with diabetes... Yeah. She was, you know.
Yeah.
So and this version by Husker Du... Right. Oh man,
little cheeky, little sentimental, all the same time, just like Husker Du.
Anyway, we got to play some Husker Du sometime.
What we should do is like an '80s Twin Cities show or something.
Yeah, we should, or just a Minnesota show.
Well, I've done a couple,
like a Minneapolis or Minneapolis.
I've done a couple of Minnesota shows. Okay. We're due actually for a local.
Yeah,
Minnesota
we should do
show.
That. I'm going to play something from Flip Your Wig. I guarantee you that.
Okay.
What's up next?
Time now for the weekly list Haiku Corner, brought to you by Imminent Brewing, a truly poetic brewery. Here is your host, Haiku Rich.
Well, Danny, I'm glad he asked.
Wow.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So lay it on me, brother.
We have. I don't know that I've got anything really good tonight or not. We'll see. I don't know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Seven.
Seven. Two of them are sort of like part one, part two.
Okay.
All right. We'll get there.
So bring the noise.
All right. I'm having a hard time with my microphone this night, tonight.
This is actually kind of amusing.
It's not funny at all. All right. Someone else's song? Those are treacherous. Oh, I screwed that up. I'm going to try that again. Someone else's song? Those are treacherous waters. You sure about this? What is going on with my voice tonight? Try it again. Someone else's.
Take three.
Take six. Someone else's song? Those are treacherous waters. You sure about this? I'll bet some people all along the watchtower don't know it's Dylan's.
Ooh. Mm. I think that's a true statement.
I think it's true. That's... Yeah. Wait. And this is a true story pointing at me. Wait. You're telling me Try a Little Tenderness isn't by Otis?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well,
I've heard a version with Bing Crosby, so yeah.
I just heard about a version with Bing Crosby. Anyway, we'll get there. Blinded by the Light. Bruce's only number one. That is just so wrong. Although, you know, when doves cry.
Well, yeah.
Anyway. All right, so this is part one and then part two.
Okay.
Tom Waits and Dylan. Just write these ready-made songs. Cover me, they beg. And many have tried. They will take up that gauntlet. But so few succeed.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Was that a dig on Downtown Train?
That was a dig on anyone who thinks they can do Dylan or Waits better than Dylan or Waits.
Well, yeah.
You know, and unless you're Hendrix.
Unless you're Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
Unless you're Guns N' Roses, because not going to... Okay, I'm not going there. I'm not going there. I Dance to the Edge. No, I Dance to the Edge. Knocking on Heaven's Door was written by Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan does it way better than Guns N' Roses. I was just poking the bear. I'm sorry. Proceed.
So you really think you'll do Stairway to Heaven? Oh, son, just sit down.
Oh, do you remember in 1985 the Farr Corporation attempted that?
I couldn't remember the name of the band.
It was the Farr Corporation.
God, it was terrible.
It was horrific. It was so funny.
They even tried to do their own little deconstructed salad thing, and it was just god awful. And it was such a cash-in because Zeppelin was at its, like, 5 years after they had broken up, Zeppelin was at a commercial peak at that point.
Yeah, this was like 1985.
And it was just totally trying to cash in on something. It was just awful.
You know, I actually bought the 45 of that because, you know, sometimes we had a friend of ours. It's okay to like crap as long as you can recognize it as crap.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew that was crap, right. And I went, this is going to be so forgotten. And I bought the 45 just so that I would have it for the future to laugh at.
I thought you were telling me, like the punk thing would be, I bought it just so I could smash it to pieces.
No. No, I bought it because I thought it was hilarious. And I only played it like once or twice. And I think I played it for people as like a, you want to hear something really lousy? And I put that on. God, and I never made it to the end.
Why would you do that to people?
Because sometimes, you know...
Why would you do that? Anyone's terrible. Don't even.
I
folks,
won't mention it
folks,
again. Don't look.
Don't
it up.
Even think about what we just talked about. Just please try to forget about it. It's just anyway. We want to thank Laura and Derek Myers for making the weekly list possible. Oh wait, hang on. I did it again.
My, what a delight. This has been Haiku Corner. Thank you, Eminent.
Two weeks in a row, you've let me forget the outro.
I know.
And, you know
I'm lousy.
I even have. It's noted. Oh, it's not noted on this script, but like usually it says play outro. Dumbass. Anyway.
never mind. Okay, continue. One of these days, we're going to put this on live Facebook as we're recording one of these, and that's just not going to be good for us. It won't be good, but it'll be amusing.
If that's going to happen, I want like a director. I want someone to kind of... Anyway. We want to thank Lauren Derek Myers for making the weekly list possible. By the way... Mm-hmm. Today, as we're recording this, today is October 20th. Today's Tom Petty's birthday, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's also Derek Meyer's birthday today. So happy birthday,
happy
Derek.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to thank Lauren Derek for making the weekly list possible every week by sponsoring the show and for being, you know, great people. I have a whole paragraph here about COVID.
Okay.
Do we want to talk about COVID?
I'm so
tired of talking about COVID.
Okay. I'll tell you what. I'm going to talk about COVID. First of all, you're going to have to, you really, really should. If you haven't been vaccinated, get vaccinated, okay? I mean, we can't warn you enough about this. Right now, Minnesota has got the seventh highest number of new COVID stuff right now in the country.
I heard that this morning.
I heard,
Makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, it does. And so there's a simple way that we can do that is just go get the damn vaccination. Very simple. And then we don't have to talk about this again. Now, Imminent is going to do a lot of the things where, first of all, if you haven't been vaccinated, for your own good, come in wearing a mask.
This really...
Even if you have been vaccinated, you should be wearing a mask when you come in.
We don't have time to go into this, but about a month ago, I heard somebody say that this has become a culture war. And I'm very slowly starting to truly understand this. Like, it is a cultural thing. The vaccine people versus anti-vaccine people. It's a whole, like, it's an entire belief system. And it, anyway.
Yeah, I understand that. But,
and it's being perpetrated by the Chinese and the Russian governments. Anyway.
Anyhow.
Now I sound like John Goodman from
Big Lebowski. Well, all of the stuff about Imminent, Laura and Derek are incredible people, and they're doing the right thing, and they care about the customers who come in, and not just as a financial source and customers coming in to spend money. That's not I believe the real reason they actually care about people.
Yep.
And imminent is Northfield's living room, as far as I'm concerned. And we're already moving into the winter season where things can't be outside as much. So it's going to be imperative that you vaccinate and that you're wearing the masks and doing all the things that we need to do. And as you and others have said, here endeth the lesson.
Right, right.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to go off script here because there's something else I've been meaning to talk about. I just don't know how to actually write these words. So I'm just going to kind of riff on this a little bit. If you come into Imminent, you'll see some signs hanging on the wall. One is rules for dogs. Because your dog is welcome, totally, but there's some rules. And the other one is rules for humans, right? Okay, and basically the rules for humans is treat others the way you would like to be treated, right? And
sure.
Two things. This is sort of getting out ahead of, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the craft brewing industry, especially in Minnesota, there has been a lot of there's been a lot of problems with sexual harassment in our business. Not thankfully, you know, not at Imminent, but there's been a lot of, so this actually became a conversation that we were having all summer long. We actually were having meetings talking about, okay, this is how it's all going to go. This is what we expect. This is how we expect things to go. And it got carried over to, what do we expect from our customers?
Sure.
You know, and there is a code of conduct.
There is.
One of the rules that we have put in place, please do not use pet names for our bartenders, which is like, you know, don't basically.
Sweetie,
you know,
cutie.
Sweetie, honey pie, all, you know, yeah, darling, whatever. And I actually, I was really nervous about this because there is not a person in the world that I have not referred to as either brother or sister. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And I had this conversation with Lauren Derrick and Katie Tower, who was the taproom manager, who was really a driving force behind this. I actually talked to a couple other people that were a couple other women that were really part of this whole thing. I am allowed to say brother and sister.
Okay.
All right. But anyway, but don't, you know, don't come in and talk about, oh gosh, you're such a pretty bartender. Please don't do that.
Well, so that means because when I come in and I see you there, I'm like, hey, sweetie, y'all got a pretty mouth there, Richard.
Yeah, don't, no.
I can't do that anymore, but I can do it in private with just you and I, right?
Well, that's, well, it's not in front of the kids, dear.
Okay, not in front of the kids.
All right.
But, you know, it's good that you've got rules for people and rules for dogs. It's good that you don't get those mixed up, you know, because
actually they're very similar.
Okay, because wouldn't that, okay, so on the humans ones, like make sure that you've got your human leashed.
No,
and,
well, no.
And, or is there stuff that says humans do not sniff other humans' butts?
Dogs must dogs must be kept under control at all times. Okay. Humans must be kept under control at all times. You know, no barking.
Okay.
You
know. And I think for both of them, don't sniff each other's butts. Others, buts.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
dogs are going to do it. Dogs are going to dog.
Yeah, so, well, you know,
whatever.
You know,
and you're not going to stop that. Dogs are allowed to sniff each other's butts. Humans are not. Oh, absolutely, there. It's how they recognize each other. Actually,
yeah,
I know it's weird. Anyway,
that went sideways.
Moving on. I don't know where that came from. So there is no live music this week. It's kind of my fault. I thought I had something set up, and then it fell apart, and I didn't take the time to figure out what was going on. Anyway, sorry. Sorry. Sorry, folks. It's on me. Still. Dragon Squirrel IPA. Cannon River Pale Ale. Prairie Creek Porter. Quicken the Red IPA. Question Mark Hill Wheat. Oktoberfest, which we're going to run out of Oktoberfest this weekend, I think.
So before the end of October.
Which is the way it should be.
Yeah, because
you don't want Oktoberfest in November. Actually, I do, but that's because I really like the beer. Double Agent J, Double IPA. La Tropical Sour Ale, which is a key lime guava thing.
Oh, yeah.
And now, back just in time for Halloween, the Zombie Palm Sour is back, which is a cranberry pomegranate sour.
I seriously don't know how these people at Imminent come up with that, the brewmasters.
They're creative. They're creative, that's for sure.
And what was the question one?
Question mark Hill Wheat.
Question mark. Every single time you mention that, though, I keep thinking question mark and the Mysterians.
You know, 96 tiers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Food trucks this week. Potter's Pasties is tomorrow night. Brick Oven Buses on Saturday. Cafe Sean Pizza Day on Sunday. Imminent Brewing is open 4 to 9 on Thursdays and 4 to 9 on Fridays. 2 to 9 on Saturdays. 2 to 7 on Sundays. As always, like Laura tells us, the staff, and everyone else, take good care of yourself and each other.
Very, very nice.
All right, so moving on.
Okay, so the next song was one of the ones that I picked.
This is my least favorite song on this list.
Okay, I love this song. It's Last Kiss by
Pearl
Jam.
Who originally wrote this song?
This was originally written by Wayne Cochran in 1961.
Yeah,
he did not have a hit with it.
This song does not work for me. You want a good like teen tragedy song?
Uh-huh.
Give me Tell Laura I Love Her.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You know that song.
Yeah, I know that.
Ray Preston, I want to say, right? Sha-na-na does a really good Tell Laura I Love Her, too, by the way. But this song has never worked for me.
I've always liked this song. It actually became a hit for J. Frank Wilson and the Cavaliers. It hit number two. You know what kept it from number two, from number one?
Blinded by the Light.
No. The Supremes with their second hit of all time, which was called Baby Love. And you know that song.
Yes, I do. I love the Supremes.
Cochran never had a hit.
I love Detroit. I love Michigan.
At the same time, Pearl Jam, this is the biggest hit that Pearl Jam ever had. It hit number two on the Billboard Hot 100. It's true.
This is the biggest hit Pearl Jam ever had.
This is the biggest hit that they ever had.
That is a travesty because this is like my least favorite Pearl Jam song.
Right. It was number two on the Billboard Hot 100. And in Scotland, it was number 43.
Scott's no best.
Okay. So anyhow, this was originally released in 1999, and it was originally put on their... Pearl Jam used to have this fan association where they put out these singles that were only for the fan clubs. And so this was recorded very cheaply by them, put on their 1998 Christmas single, and somebody started playing it on radio. And so it got placed on a benefit album
that person
for survival.
Tied to a chair, dipped in honey, and then set.
Well,
on
it was all over the radio. This song, I hated Pearl Jam until I heard this song. Truly, truly.
You know what?
I know.
I'm done. I'm out.
I'm going to say one other thing. I think it's funny that the Supremes blocked the original version by J. Frank Wilson from hitting number one. You know what kept this song from hitting number one on the Billboard Hot 100? What was number one was If You Had My Love by Jennifer Lopez. Jennifer Lopez prevented Pearl Jam from having a number one single.
From 1999, this is a song called Last Kiss by a band called Pearl Jam, a 95.1 KYNN.
Oh, Rich, you're wrong.
One.
Driven along very far. There in the road. busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train on us, feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free. For me and my Bobby McGann. From the Kentucky coal mine to the California sun, hey, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. Through all kinds of weather, through everything that we've done, your Bobby, baby, kept me from the cold world. Next to mine. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, that's all that Bobby left me. But if feeling good was easy, alone when he sang the blues. Hey, feeling good was good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Good enough for me and my Bobby.
From 1971, that was the posthumous hit from the great, the immortal, the goddess, Janis Joplin, singing Me and Bobby McGee, written by Kris Kristofferson, whom she dated for a little while. And there was a lot of people that speculated that Kristofferson wrote Me and Bobby McGee about Janis.
He didn't. The original version was Roger Miller.
Roger Miller. I've still never heard Roger
King
Miller's
of the Road.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I love Roger Miller. King of the Road will always remind me of my father. Okay. Not because he was a bum that was, you know, picking up old stogies off the floor, but because he was a traveling salesman, he was the king of the road. But I've never heard Roger Miller's version of me and Bobby McGee.
You know, the Kris Kristofferson is a tremendous songwriter.
Oh my God,
and incredible. And some people are not going to think about him as a writer, they're going to think about him as a singer and an actor and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. He's such a great songwriter.
You cannot think of Kris Kristofferson really even as a singer.
Well, but I mean, just anybody who's going to pen the words, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
I'm like, what an amazing lyric that is. Yeah, just as a concept, I love that.
I quoted that in one of my poli-sci finals one time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, great line. And Janis Joplin, this is a song to me that's all about regret and loss, because she and Bobby McGee separate, and because they were transients, they're just kind of wandering around. She has no way of even knowing where they went.
Nope.
You know, so she knows that she's never going to see him again. And like
but
you
there's
said,
something beautiful about that, about people coming together and having a time and then, you know, whatever. I mean, because this is life.
That is true. And I mean, we've all been there. We've all had those kinds of things. This is the only good thing that I'm going to say about Facebook is that it helps join some people back together, you know, from that you've lost track of over time. So whether it's a high school friend or whatever. And so I what would have happened if Kris Kristofferson had written that song now? I mean, I don't know that it could have, but
no, you can't.
Yeah, but that version by Janis, that was off of her posthumously released Pearl album.
Yep.
The thing that was interesting is that it charted in 1971.
Yep.
It hit number one, and it shares this is actually the second posthumously released song to ever hit number one.
And I can tell you what the first one was.
Okay.
Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding.
That's right. Exactly right.
Sitting on
the Dock of the Bay.
Yeah.
Which I think that he recorded that about a week before he died.
It was co-written by man we were talking about last week, Steve Cropper.
Yes. The thing that I thought was interesting about Me and Bobby McGee, I didn't realize that Jerry Lee Lewis hit number one on the country charts with his version of this the same year, 1971. Yeah, I had no idea about that. So.
I think it's weird, but whatever.
It is. I don't.
Thing is that, okay, there are 8 million other versions of Me and Bobby McGee, including Kristofferson's, right? Janis's is so good that nothing else matters.
Right, exactly. She owns it, and it is better than any version that you're ever going to hear. It really is.
Yeah.
Anyway. So anyhow, there's where we're at.
We love you, Janis. We miss you terribly, terribly, even though I was like one when you died. Moving on.
Okay.
Your favorite band. Another song from your favorite band.
He's, of course, talking about the Grateful Dead, which I do not appreciate.
Yeah.
Is that a kinder way to say? Okay. I don't have a full appreciation, so can I have some mushrooms?
So let's talk about Lyle Lovett's version of Friend of the Devil. Now, this is also from that same Grateful Dead tribute album, Dedicated, that Bertha came from.
Okay.
And it would, like, when I first had the idea for this show, the impetus was this song.
Okay.
Like, it was finding an excuse
to
play.
This and Manfred Mann's cover. Well, right? Those two together.
We're choosing to do the song this week because it's Manfred Mann's birthday.
Okay, right?
And that song was always going to be in the show, too. But this one was like, I have to find a way to get this song on the show. I should just do a show about covers that are better than the original. this song... Where do I start with this? Normally, I would be I would really like to avoid playing two songs from the same album, right?
Right.
I love. I'm not gonna relitigate this with you. I love that Los Lobos Bertha. I love it. I love it, and I love this even more. This is my favorite moment on the album, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
On the show, I'll tell you why.
Tell me why. Tell us why.
Not only does Lyle find, like, kind of like Johnny Cash with Hurt, he finds the essence of the song.
Mm-hmm.
There is a guitar solo in this song that is utterly sublime.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know what, I'm ashamed to tell you that I was so busy today. I do not know who's playing this guitar solo.
Oh, really?
And I'm kind of embarrassed by that. I will come back and I will let you folks know at some other time, because I'm going to find another reason to play this song. That's how much I love this song.
This is a great version, and I will say this, because this is true. I think that Friend of the Devil is the best song that the Grateful Dead have ever composed.
You're wrong about that.
Okay. Then I was going back.
It might be Bertha.
I was going to go back to my fallback position. I think it's interesting that two of the covers of your six choices are both Grateful Dead. And all that I'm going to say about that is, what does that say about the Grateful Dead?
Oh.
That the only that, I mean, we didn't play really any Dylan songs other than, you know. So how
well, not yet.
Well, how badly do the Grateful Dead suck that the best songs that get played are by other people and not the Grateful Dead?
From 1991.
There's also a really good version of this song by the Counting Crows, but Lyle Lovett does it better.
And I have been listening to that Counting Crows version this week, and Lyle Lovett does this better. This is, in my mind, this is the best version you'll ever hear of Friend of the Devil. From 1991 in the dedicated tribute album, this is Lyle Lovett with Friend of the Devil. 95.1 KYMN, The One.
I lit out from Reno, I was trailed by 20 hounds. I didn't get to sleep that night till the morning came around. I set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight. I ran into the devil and he loaned me 20 bills. I spent the night in Utah in a cave up in the hills. I set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight. Down to the levee, but the devil called me there. He took my $20 bill and it vanished in the air. I set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight. Why I cry away each lonely night. The first one's named Sweet Anne Marie, she's my heart's delight. The second one is prison bait, the sheriff's on my trail. And if he catches up with me, I'll spend my life in jail. I got a wife in Chino, one in Cherokee. The first one says she's got my child, but it don't look like me. I set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight. I got a wife in Chino and one in Cherokee. The first one says she's got my child, but it don't look like me. I set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight.
Young girls, they do get wearied wearing that same old shaggy dress, yeah, yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness, yeah. You know she's waiting, just anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess, yeah, yeah. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. That's all you gotta do. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She has her grief and care. But the soft words, they all spoke so gentle, yeah. It makes it easier, easier to bear, yeah. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girls, they don't forget it.
Did not know that was not an Otis Redding song.
Yeah, no, it's a cover, man.
You know. Okay, there, a song that's not on the show tonight, and sort of by design, partially because it's one of the very first songs I ever played on the weekly list, and I like to keep that a little sacred, actually. But Aretha's cover of Respect,
okay,
which was written by Otis Redding,
right,
was recently named by Rolling Stone the best song ever.
That's right. That's right. They did.
Which, you know, whatever. That's okay. That, hey, man, that's like your opinion, man. But,
right. Right. Yeah.
But and I, you know, I like Respect very much. But the thing is that the Otis heard Aretha's version of Try a Little Tenderness, and he just looked at whoever he was with and said, "I just lost my song. That girl done stole my song." You know, that, and
oh,
and,
for Respect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Which, and he was right.
He
knew
he
it.
Was right.
I can't imagine anyone else doing Try a Little Tenderness. And I know it's been done a million times. There's a great scene in the movie Bull Durham where Tim Robbins is sitting on the back of a bus trying to play that song, and it makes Kevin Costner so mad he smashes the guitar.
Yeah, but that's right.
Or
that's right.
No, he doesn't smash the guitar, but he grabs it. And
yeah.
Women don't get woolly, they get weary.
Yeah.
Neat.
Well, here's a little bit of background on this, okay? Because this was one of my picks.
Yes.
And the original version... Do you know how far back this dates?
Like 1932.
Yes, it does.
Because I went and looked it all up.
You looked it up. That's it was originally done by the Ray Noble Orchestra and it was recorded at the very end. It was actually recorded. The original version was recorded on December 8th, 1932. The writers were Jimmy Campbell, Reg Connolly, and Harry M. Woods. Now, Otis's version is Booker T and the MGs.
Right.
You know,
again,
which,
Steve Cropper.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, Booker T,
man.
Wow. I mean, you want to talk about some serious
and
chops.
And Duck Dunn on bass.
Yeah.
Man.
The thing that I thought was interesting, I mean, I started going back and going, I could not find the original Ray Noble Orchestra version. I could not.
That's good.
Which is probably very good. So I started listening to some of the other covers, and there was a cover by Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
And when I looked at the original lyrics, Otis Redding cuts out the original. There's a couple lines before the lyrics that he goes into.
And Weary? Really?
Yeah, there's lyrics before that, and it seemed very... I thought, as a feminist, I was kind of a little offended by some of
that. Right,
and so I'm glad that Otis cut that. The thing that I was really surprised about, this is such a monumental recording, and it's such a good one and definitive... that I was expecting this for sure hit number one. It only charted as high as number 25 in 1967.
Well, you gotta remember, man, Stax was very... I mean, soul music, if it wasn't Motown, it wasn't... you know what I mean? Stax didn't have the marketing machine that Motown did.
But, I mean, this is the only version of this song that I really, really know. Three Dog Night did a cover of it.
Yeah, I know.
Which
Three Dog Night is very, like, over the last 40 years, Three Dog Night is slowly. There was a point where I didn't like Three Dog Night at all. They have grown on me over the years, but I don't want to hear Three Dog Night do Try a Little. I've heard Otis Redding do Try a Little Tenderness.
Yeah,
that's
it's
all
done.
I need.
Yeah. I actually read Chuck Negron's autobiography from Three Dog Night.
Yeah.
He's, wow, what a mess that guy was.
All of them, yeah.
Anyhow,
there's another, like, there something we didn't talk about tonight. A lot of great songwriters have great interpreters.
Mm-hmm.
The Byrds for Bob Dylan.
Oh, the Byrds, yes.
Bob Dylan had the Byrds. Springsteen has Manfred Mann. Manfred Mann covered three, all off of the first Greetings from Asbury Park, but Manfred Mann covered Bruce Springsteen three different times. Three Dog Night was the great interpreter for Randy Newman.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I actually do like some of the Three Dog Night stuff.
Yeah. Some of it's really good.
And it actually, do you know the name of that band, Three Dog Night, actually came from Scotland?
No.
Because Three Dog Night is, you know, it would get really cold up in the Highlands. And so a Three Dog Night, you know, so the Highlanders would sleep with their dog, you know,
so,
for the warm.
God, it's a three
and
dog
so
night.
A Three Dog Night is a Scottish reference to a
really cold night. That's really funny.
So there you go.
Cool.
A little aside there that's we from the Scotland.
Well, folks, that's going to just about do it for this here edition of the Weekly List. If you like the show, you can find us by looking us up on our program page on the KYMN website at kymnradio.net. You can podcast us by looking for the KYMN Radio Podcast. You can find us all across the spectrum now of social media. We are on Facebook under the Weekly List. We are on Twitter at the Weekly List. We are on Instagram at the_weekly_list, and someday we're going to be on some other stuff. We're going to do Snapchat.
We are?
No, I don't know how to do Snapchat.
Well,
is Snapchat still a thing?
I don't know that it is.
I don't know.
I mean, why would you do Snapchat if you've got Instagram? I mean, because Snapchat, it's only for a minute and then it's gone.
I've always thought the Snapchat was like for, you know, like cyber sex.
It probably is.
Probably is.
We don't want to
go
there. We're not going there.
Sending nudies, but you only get a peek. You know,
yeah, we're not going there. We're not going
okay,
there.
Okay.
We got the Instagrams. We've got the Facebooks.
We are across the board. And while you're on social media, go and find the KYMN Facebook page and the KYMN Twitter page and the KYMN Instagram page. Mm-hmm. Go find the Imminent Brewing mm-hmm. Facebook page and the Imminent Brewing Instagram page as well. And
wow, this is like everywhere. I mean, is this internet thing going to stick around for a while? I mean, it doesn't seem like a fad anymore.
It's feeling like it might be. It might have some staying power.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, interesting, isn't it?
Yep. You know, we're back to vinyl records, so I've been,
that's true.
You know.
What is old is new again.
Yeah.
You know who's got some staying power?
Who's got some staying power?
Jimi Hendrix.
Yes. James Marshall Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix.
You know,
recorded the greatest cover of all time.
Yes. Hands down.
I am going to tell the story off the top of my head. I'm not sure if all of it's true, but it's a good story.
Okay.
Jimi Hendrix. Well, Bob Dylan recorded the album John Wesley Harding in 1969, mm-hmm. early 1969. Jimi Hendrix was working on Electric Lady. No.
Electric.
No, yeah, Electric Ladyland yeah. at the same time, which would have been what wound up being Hendrix's final studio album.
Mm-hmm.
Hendrix finished John Wesley Harding first. Maybe I'm getting this wrong because maybe I. Did John Wesley Harding come out in 68 or 69? It doesn't really matter. But he recorded it in 68, and I think it came out like January. No. No, because it came out after Electric Ladyland did. Anyway.
We really are meandering our way through popular culture right now.
We
really
are.
We are
the weekly tangent. So my dates are sketchy, but just work with me on this. Dylan recorded All Along the Watchtower for an album called John Wesley Harding. Hendrix was working on an album called Electric Ladyland, and he heard Dylan's song All Along the Watchtower. And he went, ooh, I want to record that. So he recorded it. And then he put his album out before John Wesley Harding came out. So this version of this song, this cover, was actually released before Dylan's original version came out.
Okay.
And by the time John Wesley Harding album had come out, Dylan admitted Hendrix already owned this song. And it's the greatest cover I've ever heard.
Yeah, it is. And there's a couple things that I just want to note from a musical point of view. The Bob Dylan version consists of two chords.
Yep.
Hendrix's contains three. Okay? There's three chords that he's
You know what
employing.
Else it has?
What?
The truth.
Yes.
Three chords and the truth.
Yes.
And a red guitar.
Yes. Well, he played it on a Strat, and Strats. Well,
it was.
You
know why it was red?
Color. Why?
On fire.
Oh god. Okay. Oh wow. Anyhow, the thing that I was going to say about this, Dylan admitted so much that Hendrix owns it that when Dylan started playing it, he plays the three chord version that Hendrix did. The one thing that I'm going to say as a advice to anybody who's listening to this, if you're listening to this on the radio, please, please, please do yourself a favor and put on headphones and plug it into your radio because you need to hear this. Unless you're in your car.
Unless you're driving.
Unless you're in your car.
In which case, you know, go when you were safely ensconced somewhere where you're not moving. Go look this song up and put on headphones.
Yes, but you want to hear this on headphones. Because the guitar part where it kind of does this drop down, you hear that, and on headphones, Hendrix has got the sound that it's literally circles around your head, and there's dive bombs and just all kinds of sound effects and the way that he manipulates sound in this. And that guitar solo, this is one of the greatest guitar solos, how it implements into the song and reflects the fury of the lyrics that Dylan has.
Is he using a little bit of wah-wah?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's, you know, and wah-wah has is that kind of wah-wah-wah.
Yep.
That becomes very much a staple of 60s psychedelia. But at the same time, I can't imagine how this song could be recorded by Hendrix or anybody else without that heavy use of wah-wah in this.
Dylan did not tour from 1968 until 1974.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't play this song live until Hendrix had been dead for 3 or 4 years. And when he did tour, the first time he went out with the band
yeah.
As his backing band. And there's a great album called...
was that the Rolling Thunder?
No. The Rolling Thunder was 1975. This was 75. He went out with... there's a great live album called Before the Flood, Dylan and the band. Mm-hmm. And they played this, and they're covering Hendrix when they play
it. Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's yeah. Anyway.
Hendrix owns this, and man, I didn't pick this one. I'm pleased that you did.
I didn't pick Jimmy picked this one.
Well, yeah,
this was the moral obligation.
Yeah, to play this, and we've played this version of All Along the Watchtower on this show before, not that long ago.
Really?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, I don't remember. Yeah. I know I've played it before because I played it on my 1969 show a couple years ago. So anyway, from 1969, the year I was born. Danny was much older. Danny was like 9.
Come on, man.
World's oldest teenager.
You hit middle age before me, though.
World's oldest teenager. I love you very much, Danny. I love you, Bob Dylan. I love you, Jimi Hendrix. I love everybody. Here's All Along the Watchtower. Thanks for listening, you guys. We'll talk to you again next week. Peace.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth. Kept love you.